From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
We are willing to compromise. I think that the way we would characterize it, just to be polite to the governor, is that his requests are just a little too or way too extreme for us to be able to compromise. He's too far to the right.
This governor was elected on a platform of change, and so that is what he's pursuing in order not just to have a short-term budget, but long-term economic health in this state.
But he's obsessed with these unions. And to me, his proposals that he told me about, he wants to basically eliminate the unions from being able to collectively bargain in the public sector.
While it is true there has been perhaps some movement towards compromise on the part of the Democrats, perhaps more so in the Senate than the House, the problem is it really doesn't effectuate the change that makes Illinois competitive.
We have now gone a little too long, or way too long, without a budget. That is, Illinois is now in month four without a state budget. Senate President John Cullerton, a Democrat, and Republican leader Christine Redonio there talking together on the Chicago PBS show Chicago Tonight. We'll talk about the budget and more this week on State Week. I am Brian Mackey. Bill Wheelhouse and Charlie Wheeler are away. Our panel includes Jamie Dunn, editor of Illinois Issues here at Illinois Public Radio. From Chicago, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio. And joining us by phone, Natasha Korecki, the new Politico Playbook writer for Illinois, formerly of the Chicago Sun-Times. Natasha, thank you for joining us and congratulations on the new job.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. So, Amanda, I'm going to start with you. Let's begin by talking. The Illinois State Museum did finally close this week. There was a candlelight vigil here in Springfield Thursday night, but state workers there, at least the ones who are left, are still getting paid. They're still on the clock. They're still reporting to work.
And that's where you've gotten just a ton of backlash from legislators, from Democrats, but really even some Republicans that I think are having a hard time swallowing this. They say it just doesn't make sense. I mean, you have the air conditioning running or the heat on now that it's gotten chillier, I guess. And you still have the building that is sitting there that was just actually earlier this year rededicated. Supporters say this museum made it through, you know, the World War. It's been around and now gone. And for what, they say, some really small and meager savings, particularly now that you still have state employees that are there. Some will temporarily be reassigned to other duties, but people are questioning, what are they going to do? Just twiddle their thumbs?
Yeah, and we've had a number of high-level departures there as people have kind of seen where this has been going. But, Jamie, I don't know that we really – I think a lot of people are still scratching their heads over why are we closing the State Museum. All right? It's not unprecedented for government to fund museums. We have the Smithsonian in Washington here. But I don't feel like – or maybe you can tell me.
A lot of states have state museums,
right,
actually.
Right, right, right. So, I mean, have we heard a rationale for, you know, why this is really where Illinois needs to save money at this time as opposed to the other billions and billions of dollars the state spends?
Well, of course, it's been framed as a budgetary issue. But as Amanda said, when you talk to folks, you know, who are close to the museum, who care about the museum, they're very frustrated and feel like the justification just isn't there and that there hasn't been enough explanation as to why this is a smart move budget-wise, because when it boils down to it, not a lot of savings, probably going to lose a lot of institutional knowledge from folks who may seek employment elsewhere. And then, of course, the state still has, in some cases, a legal responsibility to maintain some of these collections. So it's not like Illinois can just walk away from this situation.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, this is the State Museum gets called in when if there's a construction project and I believe Native American remains are discovered or something like that. There are, you know, important not only tourist roles, as a lot of people might think of it here in Springfield. It's a place where you have events and there are other sites around the state people can visit, but they do have some legitimate scientific and cultural functions as well.
Absolutely.
There's an entire research arm that I think often goes unnoticed. When you say museum, it is that, but it's more. It's that entire expertise, the scientists, the, you know, PhDs who are there that are really getting in and doing those studies. I should add also that there's the Dixon Mounds also closing, and then there's the Lockport Gallery facility. I did speak briefly with the mayor of Lockport who says, hey, the state can't necessarily closes down, I'm working with the person who we rent the space from. And right now, Lockport's doing that. That's not something that the state is doing. What right does the governor have to do this? He said he did have a conversation with Governor Bruce Rauner, and that's kind of one of the separate questions. Once and if Illinois has a budget, will the museum and these other facilities be reopened? Number one, will it be too late? Or number two, is this something that perhaps the people that go to the museum really, really do love it and support it? And a lot of Springfield area students go there, but it's not like it is one of the, you know, big tourist draws where you get people coming from throughout the state or throughout the world to go to the state museum. Is this something where, you know, Bruce Rauner, who says that Illinois needs to get more lean, looks at this and, you know, his directors have basically questioned what all does the state need to be in the business of doing, and that maybe it's the end of the museum period, regardless of what happens with the budget.
Yeah. So, Amanda, you mentioned something earlier that some lawmakers are beginning to raise questions about this, in particular because, as we said, you know, there are a number of workers who are still getting paid there. You mentioned the heat, the air conditioning. The workers are there because AFSCME, the largest public employee union here in Illinois, has filed a lawsuit saying that the layoffs notices were not done properly, and you can't just lay people off for sort of what they're saying is an arbitrary reason. Natasha, I want to turn to you, though, because this question of lawmakers raising questions about the governor, something you wrote about today. Are we getting the sense that there is some kind of bubbling up? I mean, so much of the public attention on this budget dispute has been sort of Rauner versus House Speaker Michael Madigan, the governor versus the speaker. Are you getting a sense that rank and file lawmakers are beginning to feel left out of the fun in some ways?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's happening is, you know, they're over the summer they were going to Springfield every week, not accomplishing anything or much, at least. Now they're back in their districts, and people are coming to them and saying, like, hey, we're feeling the effects of this. And, you know, social service agencies feeling the effects of it, small businesses feeling the effects. But not only that, I mean, just you talk to fiscal conservatives like David McSweeney. Yeah, he told us that we need to rise up. Members need to rise up. They're tired of being viewed as, you know, Mike Madigan and Bruce Rauner, you know, puppets. That they're, you know, for a while they drew the line in the sand and they stood with their parties, but now they're realizing it's not doing them any good. They're not having a voice. And, you know, and then even these conservative Republicans are going back and talking to their constituents who are saying, well, wait a minute, how is this good financially for the state? I mean, we've all been talking about it to death and hearing it, but the, you know, every day that goes by, it's going to cost more money for the state. If we get a downgrade, it's going to cost more to borrow. You know, so it's just the backlog of bills is compiling. You know, we're running by court order and consent decree and so forth. So it's not the right way to run. And, you know, for the most part, we're not going to go back to Springfield now until October 20th. I mean, that's a long time. So yeah, there's a lot of frustration.
Sure. And I was just going to say, I mean, one of the reasons that it's costing more money is that we're spending at last year's levels without having made any cuts to try and bring, you know, we had an automatic tax cut that took effect in January, right, Jamie? And then now we are still spending, though, at levels as though we had all that money pouring in. We're going to be billions and billions of dollars short.
Yeah, and I think Natasha makes a good point. Even the folks that want to see the state budget cut don't want to see it cut like this. You know, the decisions of where to cut are being made not by the legislature for the most part, but by court orders, where some areas of government are definitely getting funded because there are judges saying that they have to, whereas other areas aren't getting funded at all, higher ed being, you know, a pretty big example of that. A lot of the folks who'd like to see budget cuts, I don't think, are out there advocating for let's cut all funding to higher ed. They would like to see more strategic, well-planned budget cuts, and this is definitely not a strategic or well-planned situation.
So, go ahead, Amanda, please.
I was just going to add, so two things. First of all, speaking of higher ed, we did have this week the 9 presidents of the public universities in Illinois collectively sent a letter that basically said this is getting out of hand. And while some are able to continue longer than others because they have additional tuition dollars, they're bigger foundation support, but there are others. So you look at Eastern that has already, you know, moved and had to make budget cuts, moving to let people go, for example, that are unable to sustain getting $0. So they've asked for a meeting and urged the governor. It was a really eloquent letter that tried to back off any political blame, but tried to make the point of how important they are and said state money is a key part of our agreement together that right now the state isn't filling. There's that. And then I just also did want to get back to what Natasha had brought up and we had been saying in terms of rank and file members rising up and what are they going to do? And it's one of those where Illinois just does have this structure. It's very leadership driven. It is difficult for 177 members to all get together. There is that frustration, I think, very much on the part of people who are watching the budget, those that are impacted, but also legislators who, you know, when you talk to them, they say their phones are ringing off the hook now with people that are concerned about the budget situation. And yet where they're getting together, it also it seems as if they're being driven further apart and into their separate partisan corners because of how long this is dragging out. So on one hand, it's as if there's an incentive to come together because things have gotten so bad. And on the other hand, they're all the more entrenched. The more that time goes on, they're kind of clinging to their teams.
You know what I think, just to interject a little too, is what I think is interesting is, you know, Rauner's been very against this whole idea of calling a special session. He says they're a waste of time and money and so forth. But this week, I try to get something out of the governor's office. It was late last night when I asked, but I still have not heard anything, any response on that. And then earlier this week, I saw a couple other reports where the governor's office just wouldn't directly respond to that. So I find that interesting. I wonder if he is taking it. You had the Chicago Tribune editorial sort of calling for him to, you know, set a deadline, do something by a certain deadline. You just kind of wonder if there's some movement there in his thought process.
Yeah, well, and one of the things that I've been intrigued by, we talked about, you know, how difficult it is for rank-and-file legislators to kind of come together and try and work around the party leaders. We have seen the governor, at least, attempting throughout the course of this year, you know, so he certainly influenced his will with the Republican caucus. But we've seen him make little attempts here and there to try and, break the Democrats apart a little bit. You know, one of his first news conferences, I remember, he stood up there with State Representative Jack Franks, who you talked to recently, Natasha. I'm not sure that Mr. Franks is still in the governor's camp quite as much, as enthusiastically as he was that first day. Another example that came out this week was State Representative Ken Duncan. We have spent a lot of time talking about him in the past month because listeners will remember he was the state representative who skipped out on the vote that would have the AFSCME union was trying to get some more leverage in their negotiations with the governor, and his absence has been blamed for the failure of that piece of legislation. There was another state lawmaker, Esther Golar, who came, we now know, from her deathbed, basically, to come to Springfield to cast that vote. She passed away a few weeks ago. And there was State Representative Duncan. Natasha, maybe you can talk about this. There was State Representative Duncan sitting with the governor at her funeral. And I think Rich Miller even reported this week that on his Capital Facts site that State Representative Duncan had even tried to pass a note to the organizers to get the governor the opportunity to speak, which was ignored.
I mean, talk about just like throwing, gasoline on a fire. I mean, the Black Caucus and other members are so livid over Duncan and what happened. And then the optics of him, which, yes, Rich Miller, he posted that picture of them sitting next to each other at the funeral. The optics of that when, you know, here Golar made it, you know, like you said, from her deathbed. She was like a mother figure to a lot of these representatives. She was very popular, very well liked. And so they're furious with Duncan. So if anything, I think that this has really united them in their frustration. Mm-hmm. And they just are, it's personal now. You know, if it wasn't personal before, it's personal now. And I think the optics of that was a huge mistake, and I think it's going to, I think it's damaged Rauner, and it's certainly damaged Duncan.
You know, and Amanda, it's personal. It's interesting that Natasha says it's become personal for a lot of legislators. I think we heard Senate President Cullerton, you had a chance to talk to him earlier this week as well, you know, where he really keys in. He has said the governor is obsessed with unions, and unions are not necessarily a united group. You have kind of government unions on the one side and trade unions and more shop unions and all these different types of unions. They are really uniting in opposition to this governor as well, right? I mean, we're seeing out there this sort of united front that they're putting on.
Yeah, you know, it's, as you said, they've been divided in the past, and you look back to Governor Pat Quinn, who, you know, Rauner sees as this great ally of unions. But in fact, unions, of course, were very upset with him for the agreement that took months for him to negotiate, as well as, of course, the pension law that since has been struck down. But nonetheless, Quinn advocated for and signed and rallied for. Nonetheless, now, because it is pretty much in so many, nearly every one of the governor's big asks. So take away the legislative ones like term limits and redistricting. But beyond that, every other element is really tied to pensions, even property tax freeze. The Senate passed one, but it didn't include his ask that would unions say basically dismantle them on a local level at the very least. So, yeah, we had a Senate president saying that, first of all, the governor is obsessed, which is really strong language. And second of all, questioning, what's the point of getting together? We've all asked this question. And I know when I talk to people, they say, I don't understand how, given that we are now 4 months in to having no budget, why aren't the governor and legislative leaders meeting? And Senate President Cullerton says, what's the point? There's nothing to meet over. Nobody has changed.
Yeah, and we've heard reports from those meetings that I think when they were meeting, some of the reports that came out was that the governor was basically delivering the same sort of speech he would give at, you know, he'd go to the Chamber of Commerce and talk about the need for his agenda, and then he'd sit down with the four legislative leaders and give a version of that speech that he might give at a, you know, a local business roundtable or something like that, which is generally
legislative leaders don't take kindly to those lectures, would be my guess.
Well, and I talked to David McSweeney about this yesterday, too. So, you know, I same thing, yeah. You know, we keep hearing about the special session, but, hey, you guys had all summer. But, you know, his argument was, make us go down there, don't pay us, do not let us leave until, you know, really put the pressure on, and we'll come up with something. So, will that work? I don't know. I mean, it is true that during the summer, it was one day a week. So, you know, they kind of knew, we'll get through today and then leave. I don't know. I think people are, at this point, don't know. They're grasping at straws.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to imagine just seeing the way that, you know, big controversial things have gotten done in Illinois, and maybe things could be handled differently this time. But it's hard to imagine rank and file cobbling together some kind of agreement on these issues that Bruce Rauner wants to see happen. They're just so complicated and controversial, and they involve so many groups. It's difficult to picture.
This is State Week. Our panel this week is Jamie Dunn, Amanda Vinicky, and Natasha Korecki of Politico. I'm Brian Mackey. Well, so we've been hearing all year about pressure points, right? We had the state workers weren't going to get paid, and then state workers are now getting paid. The governor himself went to court to try to make sure that happened. We heard the schools aren't going to be able to be opened in August, except the governor signed a very small portion of the budget that Democrats passed that does let schools open. So I don't know, Amanda or Jamie, who wants to take this? What is the next round of pressure points we're going to start seeing now? Amanda, we heard from Secretary of State Jesse White that he is putting some restrictions into his own operations this week.
That, and followed by a letter from State Treasurer Mike Frericks. When you talk about the Secretary of State, right now it is merely that reminders that are sent to people that they need to get a new vehicle registration sticker won't be sent via the mail anymore. That's something that was costing the state $450,000 a month.
Which I found a shocking amount on postage.
I know, an incredible amount of postage.
Yeah,
and
right.
So a PSA here, you can do that online and get a reminder to your email, and that is a lot less expensive for the state.
Well,
so
but
I
was just saying
a lot of people's eyebrows raised there, but to move on from the
Well,
the
no,
point
I just, I'd like to actually make that point. This is something that,
yeah,
like, I feel like, okay, I pay a lot of
attention.
When you
look at where you can make cuts.
Well, no, but I pay a lot of attention to state government, but mm-hmm. if I didn't, that is something that I count on, right? I just renewed my license plate within the last month or so, and I wouldn't have remembered. I'm not looking at my license plate sticker very often. Maybe there are people out there who are better about that than me, but I count on that little postcard to keep me legal. So you got to wonder if are people going to start getting tickets now because they're forgetting?
And then are they going to get angry? Right. And it's one of those things where earlier, as in months ago, when we didn't know what a quote-unquote shutdown was going to look like, that's one of the highlights is you wonder, are people going to be able to go to the DMV, the areas where people have true interactions with government, if you're not dependent on one of these social service programs that thus far has really been that's been the lightning rod. But now that we could see, and I spoke with the Secretary of State's office and they said, this might not be it. At some point, we rent most of the space that the DMVs are in. And maybe the landlord will say, hey, we can't do this anymore. It's time for you to pay up the rent. Are we not going to be able to pay our energy bills anymore? Postage that isn't the reminders, but that's actually perhaps the stickers being sent out and mailed out if they can't print those out anymore. So there are all of those different areas that I think we're going to really start to see changes. Getting back to the universities, they couldn't give a defined date or X and X is going to happen, especially because it's different at every school. But sure, there's going to be that. There's going to be MAP grants for students. So there are all sorts of ways. The longer this carries on, the worse things get or the greater the impact at the very least.
So, I mean, Natasha, we've talked about these pressure points. Do we, and you were mentioning earlier that Representative McSweeney thinks everybody just needs to be locked into a room. But, I mean, can we really expect any difference unless the leaders are willing to move off their obstinance, I guess, or reluctance to, you know, change?
So far, no, right? But, you know, if you really have an uprising, right, if you really have all these different members really saying, look, I'm not going to, you know, be reelected, or this is not what I, you know, is one of the things McSweeney said, like this, I didn't run so that I can cut social services to people but fund a broken pension system. It's just completely upside down. I mean, the level of frustration is high. And I just think the dynamic of, you know, it's the legislature has been so top down and now with Rauner being so powerful, it's like Madigan, Democrats, Rauner, Republicans, and they're sick of it, you know, let's do something. But it's going to be incumbent upon them to actually do something. And you know, I was pushing back on him a little too, like, well, okay, what are you going to do? What do you do besides calling on it? Are you going to march to the state capitol? Are you going to go to the governor's office? Are you going to, you know, but it does seem like I'm hearing this more and more from different lawmakers in way different geographic areas of the state. So I think, look, Rauner needs a win, and everyone knows that. He's not going to get the kind of win he wants from Madigan or the Democrats. But if they give him something, you know, at this point, you got to think that maybe he'll just he'll take it. He said he's gone, you know, that he's pared back his demands, and he has. The question is, were the demands ever realistic in a pretty blue state still?
Well, and I would say he's said that he'll compromise further, but we have gotten no indication on where. I've asked him, have gotten no response from the governor's office or from the governor Really, it was back at the state fair when he had started making those statements, and we've gotten no indication of where he's willing to compromise, and it doesn't seem as if the leaders have gotten that either. And so who knows what these compromises could look like on either end. And, you know, we've all reported, and I think a lot of reasonable people, plenty of legislators that I talked to say, yeah, if you sit a couple of us down, we could reach an agreement. We know areas for compromise on this, but that is not where the governor and leaders are.
It seems to come down. I mean, I think, and, you know, our normal colleague, Charlie Wheeler, who's away this week, has often said that a lot of these issues are very solvable. Like, you can imagine them coming to an agreement on property taxes. You can imagine them coming to an agreement on some sort of lawsuit, changes to the lawsuit rules, and even workers' compensation. They just did a big change on that 4 years ago. You could imagine them doing some additional compromises. It really comes down to these aspects of the governor's proposal that, you know, are seeking to weaken the power of collective bargaining in at the local level, you know, as well as things that he's trying to pursue through negotiations with AFSCME at the state level. And that, right, it's an existential issue as Democrats see it. Or am I looking at that the wrong way?
I don't believe so. But I mean, when you look at pension reform and what happened there, it's not as if the Democrats in the General Assembly are totally unwilling to ding the unions. But when you look at President Cullerton, you know, he's not thrilled about the idea of making big changes without involving them in the conversation. He definitely was very frustrated when he tried to work out what he called a compromise bill on pension reform that involved the unions. You know, a lot of other folks around the State House thought it didn't go far enough. And so he really kind of went to the mat for that for a while and then finally came to terms with, you know, what was actually moving forward. Now all that's moot because the Supreme Court tossed it out. But, you know, the Democrats have been willing to do some things unions didn't like. Look back to education reform. They sat down with teachers' unions and worked out a bill there. Some of those things the teachers' unions weren't crazy about, but also, you know, the striking issue didn't go as far as some of the business and reformer folks wanted to see happen. So it's not unprecedented that the Democrats will do some things unions maybe aren't wild about, but they also want them to be involved in those conversations.
Sure, sure. Well, time now. We're going to take some time at the end of the show here for notes from the field. Amanda Vinicky, about 30 seconds each. Amanda, let's start with you.
Went to the Illinois Racing Board meeting in Chicago this week, and a pretty big decision was made. The state's oldest historic racetrack that's been operating longer than any other, Maywood and Balmoral, the owners say that they're going to have to go out of business. The racing board that decides basically you can only have races at one track in a day in the Chicago area gave no races whatsoever to Maywood and Balmoral, and that is in part fallout. They are in bankruptcy after being involved with a Rod Blagojevich extortion scheme. That's part of the decision, so we could see them going away.
Jamie Dunn.
Yeah, as we talk about things that are not happening because of the state budget and sort of speculate, you know, when is the power and the water going to get shut off? There was a news report this week that the state highway department in Vienna has had its water cut off. That reportedly happened actually mid-September. Not sure how they're coping there, but, you know, that's one of the first indications we're seeing of a utility that's not going to put up with so many past due bills.
Natasha Korecki of Politico.
Wrote about the attempts by Trump and other top-tier Republican presidential candidates trying to get on the ballot here, and the Illinois GOP expressing doubt that Trump will be able to do it, and saying that he doesn't have enough of a solid organization going on and doesn't understand the complexities of getting onto the Illinois ballot. And the fun part about that is that Trump got mad about it and tweeted that, you know, Politico makes things up and Politico does these things. So that was a fun one for me.
You know you've arrived when you've been subjected to an attack by the Donald on Twitter, I guess.
Exactly.
Briefly, I'll just mention ConAgra. Despite everything you've heard about jobs leaving Illinois, ConAgra is relocating its big headquarters from Omaha, Nebraska to Chicago. That is all our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Amanda Vinicky, Jamie Dunn of Illinois Issues, and Natasha Korecki of Politico's Illinois Playbook. You can get a podcast of this show at WUIS.org. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.